Sci-Fi Show Minicast. Welcome to the fifth Sci-Fi Show Minicast. Today I have an interview with Matthew Wayne Selznick of Brave Man Run. This is the last week in which to enter our Superheroes and Philosophy book competition, so if you haven't put a pin in the Frapper map yet, go along to www.frapper.com/thescifishow and stick a pin in, and let's get on with the interview. Well, thank you for joining us today, Matt, on the Sci-Fi Show, and we're going to have a discussion on the effects of comic book morality on young people.
I'm excited to be here.
So you're the author of Brave Men Run, the great podio book.
Thanks for that. Yes, Brave Men Run, a novel of the Sovereign Era. It's a podio book, a paperback book. It's also available as an e-book and an MP3 audio CD.
Wow.
It's actually the first work of original fiction to be available in all of those formats at once. So,
excellent.
A bit of a record breaker.
So, what sort of morality do we find represented in comic books? Superhero comic books, typically, I imagine, as opposed to something tasteful like Johnny the Homicidal Maniac.
Well, I think that's something that's changed over the years. The superhero morality used to be something very black and white, very sort of upholding the moral high ground kind of thing. From the late 70s to maybe the mid 80s, things got a lot more gray, at least in the superhero comics I was reading as a youngster, with more of the anti-hero and whatnot. And these days, I think there's some sort of a middle ground. It's definitely bounced back from that grim kind of bleak outlook that it had in the 80s with things like The Dark Knight and The Punisher and stuff like that. But I think it's still more shades of gray, even in the typical, like, Superman or something like that.
Does Superman still stand for truth, justice, and the American way?
You know, from what I have seen, not so much. At least not in the traditional sense. There was an interesting storyline, maybe it was last year or the year before, where a number of the superheroes in the DC Comics universe had some strong differences because a few of them had decided to literally wipe the memories of some of these supervillains who had done some horrible thing. And the ranks of the superheroes were split on this because some thought that that was an immoral act and others thought it was just a necessary thing that had to be done. And Superman was one of the ones who, if I remember correctly, he was one of the ones who actually was for it. So, kind of an interesting take.
Yes. Now, do these characters set good role models for children today, though? Or did they set a better role model in the past, perhaps?
You know, I can pretty much trace my own kind of moral upbringing, at least strongly influenced from the comics that I read when I was a preteen and a teenager. And that was during that sort of, you know, dark area. And yet there was still a strong sense of what is right and what is wrong, even if it's a more personal definition rather than maybe society's definition as a whole. You had a comic book like Daredevil in the 80s when Frank Miller was doing his groundbreaking work. And, Daredevil was, at that time, somebody who had kind of a messed up personal life. He was not terribly upright in his personal life, even as he was maintaining this high justice standard in his costumed life. There was, I guess, the thing that I remember the most that kind of reflected on me is that you could still have a high standard of personal ethics and kind of attempt to live that way, even though you may occasionally fail and need to come back to it, you know? The old style, like you said, truth, justice, American way, that kind of thing, that is almost an archetype, you know, not a realistic thing to live up to. I think the comics that I remember were, you know, they allowed for the fact that a person could fall from grace, and yet that redemption, that coming back to your own principles was still very much possible, and that was definitely modeled in those comics. And I think that's probably kind of continued today. That sense of more concentrating on the personal sense of right and wrong. Kind of a long answer for a short question.
I know what you mean, yes. I find a character like Batman interesting. The way he was portrayed, well, in the recent movie, and, well, at least from the different Batman comics I've read, he's very... He won't kill his opponents, and there's even... I haven't read the actual comic, but there's one where he rescues the Joker from being in prison, this, like, murderous lunatic that's going to be executed because he didn't actually commit the crime in question. It's a strange sort of principle, I don't know.
Yeah, I personally, that doesn't sound realistic to me, and maybe that's the point with that particular story. You know, it's interesting because when Bob Crane created the Batman back in the 40s, he carried a gun, you know. It was a much more, you know, kind of a vigilante kind of situation, more of a situational kind of justice. I mean, we're talking about a guy who is pathologically driven to dress up in his underwear and beat up bad guys because his parents were killed in front of him, you know, as a child. That would screw somebody up.
I'm sure it would.
I don't think that it would. The bit about him releasing the Joker because he's not responsible for one particular crime, the Batman I'm familiar with would say, well, you're in there for all that other stuff you've done.
You've got it coming.
And in there you're going to stay.
He is an interesting character. I quite like the Punisher myself. I don't know. There's
sure.
The whole idea.
Frank Castle.
Yes, the vigilante that watched his family gunned down and then goes to settle the score with all of the different mobsters around the place. There's a certain appeal to this. I don't know, maybe it's a bad thing.
Well, and it's, you know, I mentioned Daredevil, and there was a sequence of stories where Daredevil had to stop the Punisher because he didn't approve of the fact that the Punisher kills his targets. And ironically, the only way that Daredevil was able to stop the Punisher was by picking up the Punisher's gun and shooting the Punisher in the shoulder.
Oh, okay.
So it kind of showed that sometimes the tools of your enemy are the only ways to stop him. The Punisher is interesting because he's another one of these guys who, in the normal sense of things, he's got to be crazy, you know.
Indeed.
He's essentially become a mass murderer.
I suppose that's a matter of perspective.
Right. Well, he's still killing these people, whether or not they deserve it. he makes that decision.
This is true. He's above the rule of law.
Right, right. And I remember there was one story where he ended up in prison, you know, after Daredevil had done that to him. And there was a line in there, something like, you know, what are you going to do now that you're in here with us? And he said, well, no. Now you're in here with me.
Uh-oh.
Right.
That's
and I think they actually kind of borrowed that from Alan Moore's Watchmen, because he had a similar vigilante character who ended up in prison, and it ended up bad for all the other criminals.
Ah, that's no good for them. Well, I don't know. There's something satisfying about criminals getting their comeuppance.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I guess it's a question of how close to being a criminal is someone willing to come to in order to do that, you know?
Hmm. What do you think of some of the villains that are portrayed? I haven't read it yet, but I heard about it on Neil Gorman's Comicology podcast. I think it's called Lex Luthor, Man of Steel, and the Man of Steel, where Lex is trying to defeat Superman because he sees Superman as this enormous problem for humanity, because he solves all their problems for them, and they don't have to do anything or strive and work towards the future. Have you read that at all, though?
I haven't read that. I like that approach, though, because it shows that Lex Luthor has some depth to him, that he's not just a cardboard, you know, bad guy with the doomsday device of the week. It shows him as, you know, someone who actually cares about his species. I mean, let's face it, Superman is an alien.
Mm.
You know, in a literal sense, he's from outer space. He's not human, and it's an interesting approach. I'm going to have to check that out, because any time that the villain is given, let's say a realistic motive, you know, that they're shown to be a fully developed character, I think that's a good move.
As opposed to the 50s Lex Luthor, I think it was, or 40s Lex Luthor, that was mad at Superman because of an experiment that caused him to lose his hair.
Right! And that led to a life of evil genius.
Yes. As it does, I mean.
I'm sorry?
As it does.
I'm hoping I never have to find out.
Very odd, yeah. Oh, well. Plots have come a bit... plots have come a ways since then.
Yes. Well, I think that's, you know, the reader is more sophisticated. And there are fewer restrictions on the content. You know, for decades, comic books self-censored themselves through the Comics Code, at least in the States here. You know, every time a script came up, sort of a panel of folks from all the different publishers would go over it and say, nope, can't have this, can't have that. And that was a reaction to a very nearly a legislated censorship that had threatened them in the 50s. That doesn't exist anymore. And now I think it's driven more by what they think the kids are seeing in other media, perhaps. You know, so it's okay to show Daredevil shooting the Punisher, or you know, Batman letting the Joker out. It becomes a more complex thing because kids are seeing more complex things in other media.
Mm. Do you think superheroes today set a good role model for children still? I guess it depends which one. Probably don't want kids emulating the Punisher.
I think so, and I think it's a different type of role model. You know, superheroes by and large are adolescent fantasy fulfillment, right? And so with the example of Spider-Man, here's basically a teenage kid in the stories. He's 16 years old, And he's suddenly given this gift, actually, and because, again, he feels guilty. There's a lot of sort of guilt thing going on with the superhero motivations. You know, Batman feels that he owes it to his parents. The Punisher feels guilty that he survived, you know, and his family not. Peter Parker with Spider-Man, he feels guilty that he didn't stop the crook who went on to shoot his beloved uncle when he could have. So popular with the kids is because it's a reflection. You know, the X-Men, which portrays a world where people who are different and people who are outcast are ostracized by society. When do you feel more like you're unique in the world and no one understands you than when you're a teenager? That's key to the popularity of the X-Men franchise. And so I think in terms of sort of creating this larger-than-life reflection of what kids go through, I think that comics are valuable. You know, it's that feeling that, you know, there are these characters who are going through something similar to what I'm going through, and the wish fulfillment of, you know, these characters with all their problems also have these amazing abilities, and, you know, that feeling that wouldn't it be great if I could escape things like that, you know, and make an impact like that. I think the days of people saying that comics are bad for children are long gone. But I think that they actually have a value in providing that sort of sympathetic reflection for kids. I know that, you know, 20 years ago, gosh, longer than that now, when I was a teenager, you know, I didn't realize it then, but I was definitely getting that out of the comics. You know, it was a form of solace.
Well, thanks for that, Matt. I guess we'll have to wrap the interview up there. Would you like to tell us a bit more about your Sovereign novels before we finish up?
There will be two more books, at least, in the Sovereign era sequence. The next one will be called Pilgrimage, and I'm going to be releasing that hopefully in mid-2007. Before that, I'm in the middle right now of writing a fantasy novel called Light of the Outsider, and that should be out later this year, probably late November, early December. And there's a little bit you can look at on that at lightoftheoutsider.com, where you can get some idea of what the story's about and even pre-order an autographed copy of the paperback edition, if you like. As far as Brave Men Run, of course, that's over there at bravemenrun.com. And you can also listen to the podcast edition, which is me reading the entire book in episodic form. And you can either download the episodes directly from bravemenrun.com or head over to podiobooks.com and subscribe to the podcast version and get the episodes on a schedule that you choose.
So what is Brave Men Run about?
Brave Men Run is essentially a coming-of-age story. It's set in a sort of an alternate universe, 1980s. The story is about Nate Charters, and he is a young man, he's a sophomore in high school, who all of his life has been physically different from the normal appearance and the normal human appearance. His eyes are a little bit too big for his head. Legs seem a little more bulky than a normal human. He's just different enough that if you were passing him in the supermarket, you might do a double take. And this is tied into the fact that he has, for want of, I guess to encapsulate it, he has what are basically heightened senses and kind of animal-like abilities, which could be a pretty amazing thing for him, except because of his physical differences, he just doesn't have any self-esteem. He's kind of a misfit among misfits. He has got a rival who has been picking on him and degrading his reputation throughout their entire school career. And that's kind of where the story opens, is the poor kid is just kind of a loser, even though he has all this potential. And one day, he sees on the news, in a very dramatic sequence, that an individual named William Donner proves to the world that basically superpowered beings exist, and this William Donner is one of them, with almost miraculous powers to change reality. And the majority of the book is Nate trying to figure out, am I one of these people? Am I one of these sovereign people? And the journey to find that out involves there's a love interest and a little bit of intrigue. He has to find out information about his father, who has been long lost all these years, and a little bit of romance, and there's some fun and some comedy. People have referred to it as sort of like a John Hughes movie with superpowers. Kind of like The Breakfast Club or Pretty in Pink, but you add in this kid who can do these amazing things.
Oh, okay. I know I enjoyed listening to it.
I'm very glad to hear that.
Well, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Jason. I really enjoyed it.
All right, then. The Sci-Fi Show minicast is copyright Jason Rennie 2005 and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License. All music used in this podcast is copyright Nova Surfer, and more great tunes by Nova Surfer can be found at www.novasurfer.nl.